any stick of gum, nickel soda pop. I'm in the jukebox, quarter record pop. Penny, nickel, dime, quarter. That's all it takes. We're gonna have a ball, rock and roll you all on a teenage date. A penny, nickel, dime, quarter. Don't make me wait. And when the band gets hit, we're gonna make you miss on a teenage date. Business at the drive-in barbecue with a penny nickel dime quarter. That's all it takes. I wanna let you know where the gang will go on a teenage date. Penny nickel dime quarter. Don't make me wait. Gonna chicken hop, gonna chew the box on a teenage date.
That was a song called Penny, Nickel, Dime, Quarter. If you put that all together, you get 41 cents. And I think that's about what the gentleman who recorded it made on that recording. Is that right, Mr. Bob Crew?
Right, that would be right, Ronnie, yes. 42 cents, actually.
42 cents?
Yeah.
When did you do that one?
It was back in the 50s, like 51, I think it was. 51 or 52, I'm not quite clear on it. I lived so much of my time out of Detroit that it was a wonderful, wonderful time for me. I was really right. Getting brand new into the record business
right.
And making records and performing on them and producing them.
Was that the first record you actually made as an artist?
No, I had made a few other things that some of them I can do without. A few of them, you know, I did several records before that one.
Let me give you a proper introduction now that we had a little fun with that one. And I think that was a darn good record, by the way. I mean,
well, thank you.
You had a very successful career. And in fact, I think it is fair to say, ladies and gentlemen, that Bob Crew is easily one of the most successful record producers of all time. And I have to also mention that hand in hand with that, you're one of the most successful songwriters of all time as well, because your name is on so many hit records. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to present Bob Crew.
Thank you, Ronnie Allen. That was the finest introduction I have ever heard.
I'm going to add the words, Mr. Bob Crew.
Oh, that's now you're really...
I'm making it better. Now, I better quit while I'm ahead.
I think pretty soon we'll be giving me titles.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Sir Robert Crew.
No. That would be nice.
You were born in Newark, New Jersey?
Newark, New Jersey, right. We lived in Newark for quite some time and then moved to Belleville, New Jersey when I was about 7 years old.
Belleville had a lot of great performing
yes.
artists.
Yes.
Did you grow up in Belleville for most of your early years?
Yes, I did, until I finally moved to Manhattan in New York in the early part of 1950, I think it was. A prehistoric time for most of the young kids who are listening to your show.
Were you thinking when you were very young that you wanted to be in the record business?
I didn't really think that, but I wanted so much to be able to dance with Shirley Temple. I wanted to be her partner. You know, I mean, I was in love with Shirley Temple, my first crush. And that's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be up on that big silver screen dancing with her. And, you know, it got me to where I got, which was not on the silver screen, but in a silver studio.
Did you ever meet Shirley Temple?
No, I did not. It would be nice even today to meet.
So that was one of your wishes. That one did not come true. But somewhere along the line, you got into the record business. You got involved with a gentleman named Frank Slay.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I met Frank at a party that was around the holidays back in the early part of 1950, I think it was. He was sitting at the piano playing, and I walked over to the piano and started singing with him. And before you know it, people were asking for certain things they'd like to hear, and we served it up. That started a relationship that became very, very busy. I mean, it was just an incredibly active relationship. Every day we would meet and start to write songs and put them together, and it was a wonderful time for me. It was truly full of wonder, and we didn't know exactly what we were doing. We knew what we liked and what we heard on the radio, and that's where I wanted to be. I wanted to write songs that would get on the radio so that I could tell all my friends to listen.
So this was your desire. Was it mostly as a songwriter, or did you also have a desire to become a recording artist?
Well, I wanted to be very much in the business as a singer, performer, and that's where I began. Of course, I hung my hat, finally, after not too much time, on the ring that says producer. I seem to have had a great time finding artists and hearing the potential in young singers. And so I would get together with a lot of these people that I'd meet at the Brill Building or 1650 Broadway. And eventually we met up with people like Hal Miller and the Rays and made some wonderful records with them.
I had thought that the Rays were from Philadelphia only because the Cameo label on which they recorded was based in Philadelphia. But the Rays were actually not from Philly, is that correct?
They were from New York, from Brooklyn mostly.
And they consisted of Harold Miller and Walter Ford.
Walter Ford, Davy...
David Jones.
Jones.
You all know about his locker.
Uh-huh.
And
Harry James.
Harry James. Well, you know his career.
They were wonderful singers.
How did you first meet the Rays?
In front of the Brill Building. We were waiting to meet with somebody else, and along comes Hal Miller and his buddies, and we struck up a conversation. They wanted to know what we did. I told them we were producing records, and eventually we got into the studio with them, and we had a meeting just before going into the studio. We flipped a coin as to who would get to sing certain songs, because we had enough money to go into the studio and cut four sides only. So I would do two as a singer, and they would do two as a group. So we flipped a coin, and everybody in the group wanted to do this song that sounded just like a Pat Boone, Love Letters in the Sand. It was called Charm Bracelet. Well, I won, and I got to do Charm Bracelet. But the Rays lost and got to do Silhouette, you know.
They
That's
did
a pretty
Silhouette.
Good loss.
Who wrote the song Silhouettes, by the way?
Frank Slay and myself. My mother and father and I and my younger brother, Tom, were driving back one evening from Annapolis, where my brother Dan was in his third year, and we were visiting him down there. And there was something on the radio. It was one of those, The Shadow or somebody like that, a crime mystery. And they started talking about this silhouette that was seen, you know, on the window. And I said, do you know what a silhouette is? And he says, yeah, it's like a shadow. And I said, well, if I were writing a song about a silhouette, you would know what I'm talking about, right? And he said, oh, yeah, I would like that. And so the next day, when I was back home in my apartment in New York, Frank and I set about telling a story. It's kind of like a little soap opera.
The guy whose silhouette's on the shade I couldn't hide.
Recording called Silhouettes. The first big hit single, co-production, right?
You and Frank? This is produced by Bob Crewe and Frank Slay.
I understand, though, when that record came out, you kind of thought that maybe the flip side of that record, Daddy Cool, was going to be the big hit.
Well, we really did, because we thought it was very much like a couple of hits that were happening in Baltimore at the time. And we kind of thought that that would be the hit. Oddly enough, the Daddy Cool did become a huge hit by way of Australia, with a group that cut it over there. And a year later, that side was a big hit.
But the big side in the United States, by far, was
Silhouette. And a lot of people have covered the song, yeah.
Including Ermine and the Ermits.
Yeah.
They did a...
Ermine and Hermits.
Herman's Hermits. I'm Ronnie Allen. I'm talking to Bob Crewe, and toward the end of the show, we're going to be talking about a phenomenon called Jersey Boys.
All right.
Two magical words for you, Bob.
Oh, yes.
Right now, we're going to go to Billy and Lily, and the billing is Billy and Lily. I have sometimes heard the billing, though, as Billy Ford's Thunderbirds.
Billy Ford had a group that played for quite a while throughout Brooklyn and the Bronx and the New York circuit, you know, in the Catskills and places like that. And we found them again out of that same wonderful pot of musical stew that happens on 1619 Broadway, 1650 Broadway. Those two buildings just churned out one after another. Those people were unbelievably talented. And that's where we found Billy Ford and Lily Bryant separately. We put them together.
Oh, initially they were not singing together.
No, they weren't together. But we wanted a duo.
Did the song La Di Da come about before you met Billy and Lily?
The song happened, and then we just needed to record it with, I thought, and Frank agreed, a boy and a girl, a man and a woman, and with that very basic harmony that was infectious. I was waiting for a plane one morning as I was on my way to Detroit one more time, and growing impatient, I was walking up and down, and I kept kind of saying over and over, La Di Da, oh boy, let's go cha cha cha. It was like a little mantra that I had hooked onto out of my aggravation and anticipation for getting on the plane and going, you know. And so I brought it back home to New York when I came back and got Frank on top of it, and that's what it is, la-di-da.
Now, I got to tell you that the writers of songs like My Special Angel, Bebop Baby, Little Bitty Pretty One, A Lot of Lovin', Lips of Wine, and even Silhouettes, those writers must have been very, very happy with you because you plugged their songs.
Yeah, plugged all of those chart records.
It's true, 'cause
That song was recorded by so many different people, big and small and in between.
I know.
That sounds so great. And Billy and Lily had another big hit. Which
Lucky Ladybug.
One of my personal favorites by them did not become a huge hit, but I always liked it. It was called Happiness.
Oh, yeah. I liked that very much.
And now, boom, 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 we're going to shoot right to the next record, Tallahassee Lassie by Freddie Cannon.
I got the title as I was driving from Miami. Somehow I fell in love with the name of the city, Tallahassee, and I just thought it was great. And when I got back again to New York and got together with Frank, I said, let's play with the name of the city, Tallahassee. I just love it. And so out of that trip came Tallahassee Lassie. Freddie Cannon, who was then being called Freddie Carmen out of Boston, submitted a tape to us that we liked a lot. I loved the feel of a song, and so we wrote Tallahassee Lassie in that groove. But we felt that we needed to extend one section, and so we put in that drum section. That's me on the bass drum. Bum, 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 bum. You know, she
really?
Dances to the stroll, she dances to the rock. Anyway, we did that and added it to the body of the record, and it turned out to be an incredibly well-received piece of material for the Dick Clark Show.
We're going to play this record by a man who was born with the name Frederick Picariello. Then he became Freddie Carmen, and then he became Freddie Cannon. Here is Freddie with Tallahassee Lassie.
Dropping through the track, the track.
That was Tallahassee Lassie by Freddie Cannon. Did Freddie have that style initially when he submitted the recordings? Was he going, woo, and all that stuff?
Actually, that's me on the record.
Oh.
Woo!
Wait a minute, that was you doing the woo?
Yeah, I did those.
I thought it was Freddie.
Well, I got Freddie into the studio and he joined me.
Oh, okay. But you were the first one to do the woos?
Yeah.
So you actually came up with that particular portion of his style.
Well, in a way, yes. But Freddie Shirley took it out on the road and served it up grand style. The way his name came about was we were determined to come up with a great name for him. And I was at my apartment on East 50th Street in New York. We had cut the record. We were ready to go. We didn't know what to call him. I didn't like Freddie Carmen. It sounded too serious. It sounded like somebody was going to sing opera.
Yeah,
and, that's true. And so I was jumping out of the shower and started to dry myself with, above all things, a towel that had a name on it, Cannon. And I said, that's it! That's his name! Freddie Cannon!
I used to work for Casey Kasem, and if I were doing a story now, I could say, coming up, a singer who is named after a towel. Any rate, that was Freddie Cannon, Tallahassee Lassie, and of course, he had many, many more hits. His biggest other two hits were Way Down Yonder in New Orleans, and also something written by the Gong Show guy, Mr. Chuck Barris, a little thing called Palisades Park. We're going to move right now to the first solo female singer that you became very well known for. And I know you actually also, I believe, produced a lady named Tracy Day at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But Diane Reney is the one I'm going to talk about right now because she became very well known for a recording called Navy Blue. We're not going to play Navy Blue on this show because we played it on the Eddie Rambeau show a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to play something else by Diane. I'm going to play Watch Out Sally. What can you tell me about Diane Reney?
Well, Diane came in with her father by way of Atlantic Records, and I think her father was very friendly with someone at Atlantic, and they didn't know what to do with her. She wasn't the kind of artist that came out of Atlantic Records, and so Jerry Wexler buzzed me. I was upstairs from his wonderful Atlantic Records. He said he had someone that he thought I might be very interested in. She certainly had chops and could do pop stuff that was happening.
Right.
That's how I met her. I was very grateful to him when we got together and decided to go in and cut a session with her. She took direction incredibly well, and she was a very strong singer, and she could do a double on her voice that was astounding. The only person I know who is like that, as close as she is, would be Leslie Gore, who also does a double that is unbelievable.
The one we're going to play by Diane is a recording that is kind of a drama. It's called Watch Out Sally. Is this a song that you co-wrote?
No, it was Linzer and Randell. Well, I was involved with them and it, and, you know, we always kick ideas around. I remember when they started working on it, I just loved the idea. I said I wanted something for Diane that was like several other songs that I liked that were happening at the time. You know, like a lot of Ellie Greenwich's songs.
Leader of the Pack.
Yeah. They Do Run Run, that kind of thing. And so they came up with it. And it is like a little mini soap opera. It's the guys, you know. Watch out, Sally. You're going to get yourself in deep here.
Watch out, Sally, if I ever catch you, too. And I'm slowly walking down the street. me here alone. You came with me, baby. Why you taking that other girl? Put me down, it's the last bus back in town. Gotta find a guy to drive me home. Ain't no time for crying now. Come on, Sally, get back somehow. Just like Mama said, you're on your own. That guy standing over there, the guy that's giving me the stare. He looks good, I got a hunch. Up the hill, I'll beat him to the punch.
Watch Out Sally by Diane Reney, produced by Bob Crewe, and by that time you and Frank had gone your separate ways?
Yeah, pretty much. He was living in Philadelphia and enjoyed being there.
I'm Ronnie Allen, talking with Bob Crewe, and right now we should have a drum roll, and that's the best I can do. Four Seasons. How did you meet the Four Seasons?
Well, originally I met Frankie Valli by way of Columbia Records. I was given an assignment to do a couple of sides with young Frankie Valli as a single. That's how we met, and I enjoyed working with him. We put together a side that we thought was going to be very, very hot, and it just didn't really happen. But, I mean, I loved the song so much that I cut it two more times after Frankie. I did it with Sal Mineo, and I did it with my brother Tom Crewe.
What song was it?
I Go Ape.
Is that the same song that Neil Sedaka did, or a different song?
No. It's totally different. But I really thought, you know, it was going to be a big hit, like, I just want to be your teddy bear, you know.
Yeah. So initially, you worked with Frankie Valli before you worked with a group.
There was no group that I knew of. There were just Frankie, and we got along perfectly wonderfully and cut one record, two sides, and we stayed in touch, but nothing happened with the record. It just didn't go anywhere. And then about 2 years later, I was sitting in the offices of Larry Utall, Monument Music, and Larry asked me, would I sit in his office while he runs downstairs to do something in the studio? And I said, sure, I'll stay here, because a girl was out. Nobody was there to answer the phone. In any case, I was sitting there in his office, and in comes young Frankie Valli. And the minute he came in through the door, we both recognized one another instantly, and it was like old times revisited. And he says, Bob, I'd like you to meet Bob Gaudio, with whom I'm working now. And we have a group, the Four Lovers, and we made some demos. We'd love you to hear them. And so I took the demos home with me and got on the phone that night and set up a meeting for the next day at my house, where my piano was and everything. We all got together and stayed together. And what happened was the guys, Bobby especially, and I became very, very involved with writing material for the group. I picked up the masters that they had and issued them on two different labels. We didn't get a big sale out of them, but at least they were in there working, and of course we were looking for that one big hit to set them off, and it came about a year and a half later after that first couple of records went out. That was Sherry,
yeah.
Which was absolutely magic.
Now, Bob Gaudio wrote Sherry, I believe, by himself.
Bob Gaudio wrote Sherry. As a matter of fact, they were playing in a place down in Point Pleasant, New Jersey, and I went to see them, and Frankie, in one of the intermissions, started to clown around with a pair of maracas and a bandana on his head, and he started to imitate Rose Murphy, you know.
I can't give you anything but love, baby.
And I thought, my God, what is that sounding? It's incredible. So I said, Bob, you know, I think you ought to go home after this weekend. Give me a song that jumps an octave, goes from Frankie's regular, normal voice into an octave higher into that falsetto,
mm-hmm.
You know, so that you hear the break from one register to the other. I said, I don't care what it is you sing or say, but got to hear that sound,
right.
You know, that breaking, that, you know, like that. And he came through like gangbusters. He brought in Sherry, pretty much like the way it happened in the show.
We're going to listen to it right now, and this is the one that really started it all for the Four Seasons, a number one smash called Sherry. By the Four Seasons. They actually had gotten a little bit of action as the Four Lovers with You're the Apple of My I.
Yeah, and as the Four Seasons, they got a tiny bit of action out of Philadelphia. Before Sherry, we did a cover on the old song Bermuda, down in Bermuda.
That was a song that was originally done by the Bell Sisters, and eventually
right.
Linda Scott did a version of it too. The Four Seasons consisted of Frankie Valli, the lead singer, and Bob Gaudio, who we just mentioned.
Who was the keyboards and the writer with whom I wrote all the time.
And then there was a gentleman named Tommy DeVito.
Tommy DeVito.
And finally, the bass singer, who was Nick Massey.
Right.
And sadly, Nick is no longer with us. But people will always remember Why Don't You? His contributions to those records were just enormous.
But he was an amazing talent when it came to voicing the group parts. He was just amazing.
Also should point out that Tommy DeVito has produced a lot of records on his own.
Yeah.
You worked with four multi-talented guys. The follow-up record to Sherry was called Big Girls Don't Cry, and you got inspired to write this.
Well, I came home one night. We were looking for a follow-up song to Sherry, and Bob and I were trying to come up with something to write that would be as good or better or, you know, something that could be put into the ring and hope for another knockout. And I came home. I'd had a few drinks. So I was a little bit tipsy, so I kind of passed out watching something on television. It was John Payne and Rhonda Fleming, and it was one of those westerns. I fell out, and at some point, there was such a racket on the TV that it woke me up, and there was John Payne standing over Rhonda Fleming saying, "Well, how do you like that?" He obviously had just slapped the hell out of her, and she looked up at him and said, "Big girls don't cry. Get out of here." And I just thought, well, that's the title, Big Girls Don't Cry. I laid it on Bob the next day, and he loved it, and we wrote it that day.
Big girls don't cry. Big girls don't cry.
Big Girls Don't Cry, that was the Four Seasons. After Big Girls Don't Cry, they had a third consecutive number one hit, which was Walk Like a Man. They also had a release of Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, but that was a seasonal record, and we're going to exclude that because in terms of their regular releases, Walk Like a Man was really their third consecutive number one hit.
Right. So
they also had Ain't That a Shame, and they had a double-sided hit called Candy Girl and Marlena, and they had one called New Mexican Rose, and then they had Dawn Go Away. What's the story with Dawn Go Away?
That was written by Bob Gaudio and Sandy Linzer, and when they brought it in, I said, we've got to use this, we've got to go in and cut a session, I love it, it's hot, and it was an immediate smash.
This record, as well as the others, was recorded at a studio called Stay Phillips.
Yes, in New York, it was in the hotel across the street. Oh, God, I can't remember the name of the hotel now, but it's a huge hotel right there on 7th Avenue and 52nd Street, 52nd to 53rd. It took up that whole block.
In addition to the great vocal talents of these four guys, I think the thing that made these records was the production elements. There was a certain sound, the special effects, whatever. Was there something about Stay Phillips? Was there something that you did, you know, the background sound? It was like a kind of a Bob Crew Four Seasons sound.
Well, yes, it was. And we developed the sound, having had a lot of time working together on so many other records. All of that experience went into the making of their very identifiable trademark signature sound. The foot stomping was me. It was mine. My big shoes.
Your big shoe. And wasn't
big
there...
shoes, and they had a wonderful area at Stay Phillips where the parquet floor was a little bit shaky, a little bit movable, and it had a great ring to it. That's where I would do my stomping, you know.
Oh,
and
man.
I did it on a lot of their records. I mean, a lot. And with my leather heels, it really worked.
Pretty as a midsummer's morn, they call her. Hang on.
Dawn by the Four Seasons. Let me tell you, I actually think that the Dave Clark Five, when they did Glad All Over and the follow-up Bits and Pieces, I think they kind of emulated your sound.
Yeah.
Five did.
But we were all having an incredibly wonderful communal bake-out. I mean, we were making, you know, wonderful stews and wonderful souffles or whatever the heck you want to call them. I mean, our cooking was on record. It was on tape. And yeah, we copied from one another. It's like the way the great painters in Europe copied from each other. Picasso, it goes right down the line. Braque looks like a Picasso. Looks like they're talking to each other. Well, the same thing happened in the music business.
Right.
When I eventually came out to California many years later, in 1972, Barry Gordy came over to me and says, "Thank you for those feet, man." He said, "It made baby love."
Just going to mention a few others by title, and then we're going to move on to Mitch Ryder. And toward the end of the show, we're going to have a little Jersey Boys segment, and we'll hear a few more songs, but not by the actual Four Seasons.
All right.
Other recordings that made the top 10 by the Four Seasons were Ronnie, about a girl named Ronnie. That was not a guy named Ronnie.
Right.
And Ragdoll.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was Save It For Me and Let's Hang On and Working My Way Back to You and I've Got You Under My Skin and Tell It to the Rain and Come On, Mary Ann, and then eventually Who Loves You in December 1963. Oh, what a night. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby, and you really do need an extra hour just to do the Four Seasons.
I got news. I need an extra hour just to read those titles.
Exactly.
We're going to move on now to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. And we sometimes can call Mitch Ryder one take Ryder because I've heard from what you've told me in the past that this guy could just go into the studio and just do things in one take and then just hop out. Okay, I'm done.
The first time that happened was on Devil in a Blue Dress. And I said, "Mitch, I know you're leaving. You're in a hurry. You got to catch your plane." I said, "But give me a pilot vocal so I can do the overdubs around you, you know, some guitar licks and what have you." And so his bags were there, ready to go, out the door with a taxi waiting. And he says, "Okay, I can only do one." And I said, "Give it to me right now." He went in, cut the thing, and that is the master take. We never touched it. It was so perfect.
Was that supposed to be a reference recording?
It was supposed to be a reference for me to work off of. And, of course, I did work off of it, but there was no touching it. It was a master. It was fantastic.
Looking mighty now, here she come. Wearing a wig hat to change the mask. Got her high heel shoes and an alligator hat. Wearing a pearls and a diamond ring. Got brave, but on a finger now and everything. Devil with a blue dress, blue dress on. She's the devil with a blue dress on. Lord, have mercy. The finest girl alive. You walk real cool, bitches, everybody's eye. I got to be nervous, I can't say hi. Not too skinny, she's not too fat. She's a real dumb singer and I like her mindset. Devil with a blue red, blue red.
to me now.
Devil with a Blue Dress On and Good Golly Miss Molly, Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. And Mitch was actually born with the name William Levice in Detroit, Michigan, as you might have suspected. And how did you first hear of him?
Disc jockey in Detroit sent me a tape of the group. They weren't called the Detroit Wheels at the time. I can't remember what they called themselves.
Right.
Oh, I know. It was Billy and the Rivieras. When they came in, I had them spend about 2 months just barnstorming and going through material. I came up with the name because I wanted the kind of a bombastic name that would bite and grab you and you'd hold on to it. And so I came up with Mitch Ryder, which is pretty far away from what his name was because he was calling himself Billy Lee. And then one day I'm waiting to cross the street in New York and there goes a truck with Ryder on it. And I go, oh yeah, Ryder. And that's his name, Mitch Ryder. And then, of course, Detroit Wheels was a natural thing. That,
you know, I've seen a lot of these trucks that say Carolina on it. Now, if the truck had said Carolina, would he have become Mitch,
no,
Mitch Carolina? I mean, you.
No, no.
Then you look at towels, you name Freddie Cannon, you look at.
Well, I'm always looking. I'm always looking at and around and into and over and beyond. You know, I mean, there's stuff out there to inspire you if you just look at it. You know, you turn over. I mean, if there's a penny on the ground, you pick it up, you turn it over, and you find out it's a rare old penny from Belgium or something.
That's possible, yeah. Could be a penny, could be a nickel, could be a dime.
Or a quarter.
Yeah, absolutely. Leslie Gore was pretty well established by the time you got to produce her on a record that was a little bit different from anything she had done before. Marvin Hamlisch wrote this song. It was called California Nights.
I was working with Hutch Davey, who was a great, great arranger. Leslie had worked with the best people in the business. She had all those hits, It's My Party, Judy's Turn to Cry, with Quincy Jones. So she's used to working with royalty, you know, when it comes to her people that she's worked with.
Yes.
And she's a gem of an artist. I mean, talk about one take. You know, she's just amazing. And then when she does her double, you can't believe she's doubling. It just sounds like it's this incredible electric shadow.
Hand in hand, it's fun.
produced by Bob Crewe and beautifully sung by Leslie Gore, California Nights, that became Leslie's last top 40 hit. I am Ronnie Allen talking with Bob Crewe. And Bob, you actually had a chart record on your own. It wasn't Penny, Nickel, Dime, or Quarter. It was the Whiff and Poof song, which I think at one time was a Yale drinking song.
I think, yes, it was traditionally the Yale drinking song. And I do believe that Rudy Valley had a hit on it back in the 20s. I guess they were on cylinders in those days. I don't know.
Probably. But you had heard Mac the Knife, and you, like everybody else, love the elements in that song. And I think that it's fair to say that the style on this record was very Bobby Darin-ish.
I told Bobby when I was going to go do it, I said, Bobby, I hope you don't mind, but I'm really chasing after your Mac the Knife with the arrangement that I'm using. And he said, hey, you know, come on, there's room for both of us. I thought that was a great big compliment coming from someone whom I have always thought is one of the fantastic great singers of all time.
When this came out, I guess about a year after Mac the Knife?
Yeah, just about.
Bob Crewe, the Whiff and Poof song.
To the tables down at Morris, to the place where Louis dwells, to the dear old Temple Bar we love so well. Sing the Whiff and Poofs assembled with their glasses raised on high, and the magic of their singing cast a spell. Yes, the magic of their singing, of the songs we love so well. Shall I wasting in my morning in the rest? Oh, we will serenade our Louis while life and voice shall last. Then we'll pass and be forgotten with the rest. We're poor little lambs who have lost their way, singing by, singing by, singing by. Oh, we're little black sheep who have gone astray, singing by, by, by. Gentlemen, songsters up on a spree, doomed from here till eternity. Lord, have mercy on such as we. By, oh, by, one more by. We're poor little cats who lost their way, singing by, by, by. And we're little black sheep who have gone astray, yeah, singing by, oh, one more by. Gentlemen, songsters off on a spree, you're doomed from here till eternity. Oh Lord, have mercy on such as we. Oh, ba, 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 ba. On such as me, singing by, 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 singing by, 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 singing by, oh, by, 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 by,
Bob Crewe and the Whiff and Poof song. Now, that one did not make the top 40, but Bob, you did have a recording under your own name that made the top 40 in which you didn't sing a note.
No, I might have been humming way in the background.
You may have been humming, but you had to create a generation
right
to do this.
It was all my studio men, the ones that I work with all the time. We got together and made a record out of the Pepsi-Cola commercial.
Yeah. Did Hutch Davy conduct that?
I was working quite a bit with Hutch in those days. I loved working with him. He was very fresh, always. He did the arrangement, but when we would sit on a song like that, you know, I mean, I'd be singing violin lines. That's the way I worked with all my musicians, all my arrangers. I'd draw pictures, you know, on his manuscript. I would put lightning bolts, you know, or whatever it was that I imagined, I saw or heard. Be clouds and birds flying, you know, where the violins come in. So I'd be scribbling all over the chart. Charlie Colello has a couple of those that I did that to, and I think he framed one of them. It's in his house in Florida.
How did you come up with the name Bob Crew Generation?
I think it was part of the times that we were in, and I wanted to be part of the generation that was, you know, so hot in the 60s. And, of course, with the Diet Right Pepsi-Cola that they were promoting, they were saying Pepsi Generation, and I just lifted it. Thank you. And now most people think that Pepsi got Generation from Bob Crew, but it's the other way around.
Oh, gee, maybe we should let them think that. Let's listen to it right now. The Bob Crew Generation and Music to Watch Girls By. That was Music to Watch Girls By the Bob Crew Generation. One of a handful of songs over the years, or probably more than a handful, that were based on commercials. I'm Ronnie Allen, so pleased to be talking with Bob Crew. And we're going to talk about an artist who is sadly no longer with us. His name is Oliver. William Oliver Swafford was his full name. How did you meet Oliver?
He was part of a group that came through the doors one day with their manager, Bill Cash, who was a great guy. But we lost Bill Swofford 5 or 6 years ago. But they had a wonderful group. It was kind of like a male Peter, Paul, Mary kind of group. And one day I just got the idea that it was a wonderful thing to do the song from Hair, you know, Good Morning Starshine. Right. I had tried it with Eddie Rambo, and I was still determined that that was a hit. And so we went in and emulated and copied the drum track from the original record, and we were off and sailing. And I remember after cutting that record, leaving the studio at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I had it on a cassette player. And so I walked my way back home. I was living up on the east side, and I just couldn't stop playing that tape. I just knew that this was, oh, if I ever heard a hit, this was it, you know. It just blew my mind.
That was Oliver and Good Morning Starshine from the Broadway musical Hair. Oliver followed up that record with a song called Jean, which was on a label called Crew. What a coincidence. Has the same name as you, Bob.
Yeah.
C-R-E-W-E.
And Gene was from the movie The Prime of Miss Jean Brody. Rod McKeown called me and said, I'd like to send a song over for you, to you, for Oliver, if you want to hear it. And when I heard it, I said, you got it. I think it's the next record. And it was.
And it got to number 2 on the chart.
Roses are red, all the leaves have gone green, and the clouds are so low you can touch them, and so come out to the meadow, Jean. Jean, Jean, you're young and alive. Come out of your half dream, dream, and run if you will to the top of the hill. Open your arms, Bonnie Jean. Till the sheep in the valley come home my way, till the stars fall around me and find me alone, when the sun comes a-singing, I'll still be waiting for Jean, Jean. Roses are red, and all of the leaves have gone green, while the hills are ablaze with the moon's yellow haze. Come into my arms, Bonnie Jean. If you will, to the top of the hill, come into my arms, Bonnie Jean.
That was Jean by Oliver. I am Ronnie Allen, and we got one more record before we talk about Jersey Boys. I think you'd have to say, Bob, this is kind of off the wall. I mean, discotheques and the sexolettes.
Yeah.
Dum 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 dum. Dum 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 dum. What can you tell me about Get Dancin'?
Well, Get Dancin' was a whole concept that I came up with and wanted it to sound like it was happening in a disco with a DJ spinning records. And we cut a track that was killer. It was absolutely wonderful. And we didn't have anyone to be discotheques. And we just couldn't think of who would be the best person to put on top of this track that was absolutely infectious and incredible. And then one night, Cindy Bullins, who's a great songwriter and artist and a great friend of mine, we were sitting around the apartment and it was getting late. We were watching Johnny Carson when on to the program comes Monty Rock III, my old friend from New York. Both of us looked at each other and we both at the same time said, that's discotheque. And so I called the station, got a hold of somebody there, and left a message for him to call, and we did, and it sounded like he was there from the get-go, like he was instigator. He's a wonderful, crazy guy.
That was Get Dancin' by Discotex and the Sexolettes. Right now, Bob, it is time to talk about something that I think is these days one of your favorite topics. I could say it in two words, Jersey Boys. It is a phenomenon. There have been shows in the past which have attempted to tell the stories of various recording artists, but this show became the most successful show of its kind. It is still the hottest ticket on Broadway. The singer-actors portraying the Four Seasons are John Lloyd Young as Frankie Valli, Daniel Richard as Bob Gaudio, Christian Hoff as Tommy DeVito, and J. Robert Spencer as Nick Massey. How do you find people who are going to be able to sing and act like the Four Seasons? I mean,
well, that's why there are people in the world like Des Makanoff and Bob Gaudio who can ferret out these gems, these jewels. There are so many talented people out there. They have to be found by somebody who's looking for something specific. What's going to happen with this show is there will probably be a dozen road shows going on. Now, there are three. There will be four very soon. They find these people who can not only play and sing, but they can act. They are actors who can sing, really sing.
But there's one additional element. It's not just enough to be able to act and sing. You have to sound like, you have to emulate the Four Seasons. That's an extra
talent. Exactly. Well, that's why Bob Gaudio, with his super talent, who knows the harmonic structure and how it is achieved with any singers, works with every one of those groups whenever they come in to get a new group, whether it be in London, England, where it's going to open in a couple of months. He's involved in every one of them. The one thing that is beloved by this audience now has turned into, it's like it's growing, bigger than it ever was. It's just an amazing thing. People go to that show 3, 4, 5 times. And I don't know of any other show that makes people do that.
You were not at the recording session for the cast album, were you?
No, I was getting over a bad bout with a hospitalization that I had. Bobby sent me the track to listen to, and I got to hear the whole show. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I just thought magic has struck. But I was alarmed. I was actually a little bit afraid of what was going on here. And so I called up, got Bob on the phone. I said, Bob, listen, I love what you've done. I just think this is the most magnificent representation of the career of the Four Seasons. I said, but you know, we're going to get in trouble. You're going to get in trouble. You can't do what you did. Well, he says, what are you talking about? I said, you can't use Frankie Valli on this record. And he said, you're funny. He said, you know who that is. I said, no. He said, that's John Lloyd Young. I said, I can't believe it. I said, I'm sitting here listening, and it's breaking my heart. I'm going, oh, what a great performance. But it's Frankie. Unbelievable. I mean, it was just, he caught the whole thing. He got it. He captured it onto a CD. You know, it's just amazing. I mean, it is amazing. I think that's what happens. People go there, and by the time you get to somewhere about two-thirds of the way through the whole production, you now are in love with these guys who are the Four Seasons. They are the Four Seasons, and that's who you're watching. You forget that this is a play. You think it's really happening. It's an amazing thing, and I do it almost every time I see it. I fall into that wonderful trap, and I know, oh, wait a minute, you know, I'm going off the deep end again.
Do you remember the first time you were told that there was going to be a musical called Jersey Boys? Was it Bob that told you that, Bob Gaudio?
Well, I knew there was going to be a musical because Bob had gotten together with Des Makanoff and the writers, Rick Ellis and Marshall Brickman. Years before, at least a dozen years before, Bobby and I wanted very much to do a Broadway show. And in a way, I'm glad we didn't capture an idea that would have gone to Broadway, because it took all the time that it did take. And eventually this story idea came by way of their moving around. At first, I think they wanted very much to get either a special or some kind of an incredible hour, two-hour show, you know, on television. But they were convinced by other people outside of the circle that they had a Broadway show on their hands, and it sounded like a hit. And so they went for it. And it was like I had just won the national endowment or something. I just won the lottery 2 times in a row. I mean, I had won it on the first time around.
Yeah.
Now here it is being dropped in our laps the second time around.
How about the Nobel Prize and the Pulitzer Prize, too?
Yeah,
feeling.
Both of them.
How did it feel being on the stage of the Tony Awards when they won the best?
It was magic. You cannot imagine how it just consumes you with joy.
Yeah.
And the feeling you have, the camaraderie you have for all of those people that are in the show, and just that it happened. You know, I've just witnessed a miracle, and it's going on and on and on. It's only just begun. I think when it opens in Vegas, it'll be there for 15 years.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for spending the time with myself and everybody else in the world tonight.
Thank you. The joy and the gift is from you to me. I loved being here.
I want to wish you continued success in all of your future endeavors, continued good health and happiness. Really, Jersey Boys is part of your legacy, too. Let's face it. We're going to close the show right now with a medley. This is not Frankie Valli doing lead on these records. This is the cast of Jersey Boys. The songs you're going to hear in this medley that I've put together were all co-written by Bob Crewe. They are Let's Hang On, Bye Bye Baby, Baby Goodbye, and John Lloyd Young singing the solo on Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
There ain't no good in our goodbying. True love takes a lot of trying. Oh, I'm crying.
Just too good to be true.